How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 130 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder. Subscribe to the podcast there and leave a review once you're on that page as well. Find us on audioboom.com too, and log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site. You can find all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Happy Tuesday if you're listening to this one on the day it's posting. Crazy Thunder win tonight. I'm recording this one in Salt Lake City after the Thunder just beat the Jazz 97-95. Russell Westbrook had a game-winning shot with 1.4 seconds left in the game after Gordon Hayward tied it with a three coming off a curl with 10 seconds. Just a crazy finish in a game that honestly it looked like the Thunder probably definitely could have lost and maybe should have lost with the way that they played in the second half. It felt like at times like they were down 15 points. Like I had a gamer written where they lost the game. I had a whole gamer written where they lost the game. I kind of thought that was what was going to happen. And it was one of those games where they fought back. They were down 9 in the second half. They were up 9 in the first half. Down 9 in the second half, though, they couldn't buy a bucket in the third quarter. And Russ was great in the final 4.5 or so minutes. He was awesome down that stretch, and they ended up winning. So Russell Westbrook, 38 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. Triple-double number 22 on the season, number 59 in his career. That ties Larry Bird for fifth all-time on the all-time triple-double list. Victor Oladipo had 18 points. Steven Adams returned from the concussion, so he only ended up missing two games from the concussion. The Thunder were benefactors of that schedule, where they had five days separating games. They played Wednesday, and they didn't play again until Monday, and Adams missed. He was out for 8 days, but he only missed two games in that stretch. He missed the Clippers game. He missed the Warriors game. And from the way the Thunder played in those games, I mean, Steven Adams isn't going to swing that thing 25 points in all likelihood. So chances are the Thunder are probably about the same spot where they'd be even if Steven Adams were okay. And I thought he played a good game. He had 9 points and 6 boards, but I thought he played a good game against Utah in terms of the way he defended the pick and roll, especially in the second half. Thought he was quite good. He made some huge plays down the stretch. A massive offensive rebound, which basically got the ball out to Russell Westbrook when it was a one-point game. Jazz eventually ended up fouling, and Westbrook made both free throws. He was good in transition. He made some really, really big plays down the stretch. Had a big block in the final minute and a half there also. Crazy game for Russell Westbrook. Like this was the I tweeted at one point, this was the ultimate Russell Westbrook experience. So he had 38, 10, and 10, finished with a crazy line. Triple-double, started off 7 of 10 from the field. He was on fire, and he only had 2 points in the paint in the entire game. And that came with under 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So he went, what, the first 43-plus game minutes of this game without having a point in the paint. And he still finished with 38 points. It was such a weird game because his jump shot was on fire early. He was torching Dante Exum from mid-range. He was getting into the mid-range area and just hitting 16-footers. Then he started stepping out to three, and he was hitting threes, and he was hitting those pull-up threes. And then he started heat-checking. And once he started heat-checking, he missed a step-back three. He was 7 for 10 from the field. He had 22 points. It was late in the second quarter. He was playing a great game, and it wasn't just the scoring. He was getting out on the run so well. The Thunder had 20 fast-break points in the first half. They were great, which against the team that is really as good defensively as any other team in the league. They're number 2 in the league in defense coming into the game. I haven't checked what they are after. But they were number 2 in the league in points allowed per possession coming into the game. Just barely like 2 or 3 tenths of a point behind the Warriors. And that's it. So, I mean, essentially, you know, you can make a really good argument that this is the best defensive team in the entire league. They're really good at cutting teams off in transition, getting into their half-court defense, And that's when they really excel, because you got to finish around the rim with Gobert there and all that stuff. And that's kind of why Westbrook didn't really get to the rim all that much. Wasn't attempting a lot of shots there and only made one of them. One shot made in the paint. 2 points in the paint for Russell Westbrook, but he scored in a bunch of other ways. The jumper was hot early. Then after he missed that step back three, it all kind of fell off. He missed 13 straight shots. This is the second time on this road trip that Russell Westbrook has gone 12 or more shots that he's missed in a row. He missed his first 12 shots of the second half in the Minnesota game, made his 13th. Didn't matter at that point. They were losing by too much. Missed his first 13, not his first 13 shots of the second half, but he missed 13 straight shots. That streak spilled into the second half. I think he missed his first 10 shots or 11 shots of the second half. He didn't make a shot in the entire third quarter. He didn't score again until that contested, kind of contorted layup that he made with under 5 minutes to go. That was his 14th shot that he ended up making, and it went down. And then he caught fire, and then he hit a turnaround, contested mid-range jumper. He hit a three. He started getting out in transition again. I mean, it was the full Westbrook experience, all the way down to the unbelievable, majestic missed dunk that he had on Rudy Gobert with 10 seconds left in the first half, which was amazing. Just amazing that he can get so high. Like, it's amazing when an away arena has that kind of reaction to a missed shot. You know, like, obviously the Oklahoma City arena, the Oklahoma City crowd is going to have that reaction. But when a pretty aggressive away crowd in the Jazz, they heckle a lot. It was a very heckling crowd tonight. And when they're heckling Russ like crazy, it's interesting when he goes up and almost slams on Gobert. And the crowd was just like, oh my God, I was impressed with that one. Some Twitter questions. From friend of the show and former guest, Andrew Schlecht of the Down to Dunk podcast, who sent this one in on Twitter. Why don't the Thunder run a pick for every big shot or game winner like they did against the Jazz? I have a related one coming in a sec. I'll describe the last play. So basically, game tied at 95. Gordon Hayward's just tied it. He came off a curl on an ATO, hit a turnaround shot, open three. It was a really nice play by Quinn Snyder to get him open on that long curl. And 95-95, about 10 seconds left, 10 and a fraction left. Billy Donovan calls timeout. Coming out of the timeout, they don't take it on the sideline. They take it on the baseline. Not the first time that they've done that. They did that against Milwaukee. I think they did that at Boston, too, late in the game, coming out of a timeout. And Billy Donovan talked about this after the game. They wanted to keep the floor as spaced as possible because in the second half, one of the reasons that Russell Westbrook cooled down in the second half, the Jazz were trapping very aggressively. That was a halftime adjustment they made. They wanted to trap him very aggressively on pick and rolls, and they were doing a really good job driving him to the sidelines. And something that Westbrook wanted to do, they wanted that floor as spaced as possible. So if Gobert was going to drop back, and Gobert normally plays in a drop, Donovan told Steven Adams, all right, go up there and set a flat screen. Now, a flat screen is a screen that Mike D'Antoni basically didn't invent, but very much popularized in the NBA about 12 years ago, which is when you see Tim Duncan set them all the time. Like, Tim Duncan was like the master of the flat screen. Now that he's out of the league, I don't know who the best flat screener is, but it's when a big man goes up behind the actual defender guarding the ball and then adjusts on which side he's going to set the screen as the ball handler starts to move. And it's a hard type of screen to set. You have to be really good at it, because it's really easy to set an illegal screen when you're setting a flat screen. But Steven Adams is one of the best flat screen setters in the entire league. They had said if Gobert was going to drop back, set that flat screen. Now, why don't the Thunder run that simple pick and roll or flat pick and roll? Why don't they run that more often in game-winning situations? I think you can make a good argument they probably should. I think that's fair. I think the reason we saw it tonight, when maybe in some other scenarios we don't, is because they knew Gobert was dropping back. And they thought that, okay, Steven Adams sets a good screen here, and Steven Adams might have set a pretty illegal one. But you know what? The best screen setters don't set all legal screens. Thunder fans know Kendrick Perkins. Everyone knows Kevin Garnett. Everyone knows Tim Duncan. All the way down to, like, the Andrew Bogut's of the world. The best screen setters set illegal screens. That's what makes them good. They get away with illegal screens. And Steven Adams might have gotten away with one on that one, but Russell Westbrook ended up getting into the mid-range area, and that was a shot they liked, which they figured they could get because Gobert was going to drop back. That was their logic. Now, not every team is going to drop back in that scenario with the floor spread. That's how the Jazz do it with Gobert. They keep him around the rim. But that was why the Thunder ended up going with that tonight. I do agree. I mean, I think they should run more pick and roll in general. I think they should do that more times in general, which I think is good. Also, a related one from Kyle Platt, who wants to know, why don't the Thunder run Oladipo pick and rolls? I think they could run more Oladipo pick and rolls. He's not bad as a pick and roll ball handler. I think the reason they don't is because when Oladipo is running a pick and roll, that means Russell Westbrook is off the ball. And while Russell Westbrook is a better pick and roll ball handler, Oladipo is also a better floor spacer. So if Oladipo's on the ball, like, Russell Westbrook's not really a massive floor spacer. Now, guys guard him not necessarily corresponding to his three-point percentage. Like, guys guard him tighter than your average 31%, 30%, 32% three-point shooter because he's a huge star. And you don't want to get beat like that. But he doesn't really drag guys out as much as Oladipo does, who's a better catch-and-shoot threat. So I think that probably has something to do with it. But I think you could also argue that the Thunder should be running more of those. I think you should argue that the Thunder should be running more pick-and-rolls in a lot of capacity. Now, it's hard to run pick-and-roll when you don't have good floor spacing, and that's a problem that they have, obviously. But I think you can make a really good argument that the Thunder should run more pick-and-roll because Russell Westbrook is good in the pick-and-roll. At the same time, maybe if they run more pick-and-roll, it leads to more mid-range jumpers. Maybe that's not something that Billy Donovan doesn't want, maybe. You know, Russell Westbrook has a propensity when teams drop back against him, he has a propensity to put up 18-footers. Like, remember that Phoenix game, which I bring up all the time? Because I think 16 mid-range jump shots in one game is, like, the most insane thing ever. He took 16 mid-range jumpers in one game. Like, if you run a lot of pick-and-roll, maybe you make yourself more prone to that. Maybe that's something Billy Donovan doesn't want. And Oladipo has a similar thing, where he doesn't always go all the way to the rim. He likes to pull up too. So maybe you just end up taking way more, you know, maybe the shot chart is just too ugly to where Billy Donovan doesn't want to run as much of those types of plays. But I do think Steven Adams could be more active as a ball screener. And that's something I've talked about before. Something Andrew, who tweeted in that first question, has talked about on his podcast. And I think there's a really reasonable and strong argument to be made in that sense. Next one from Chris Gregory. Where does this rank on the scale of big wins this year? All right. Jazz are really, really good. This was a really good win. Really, really good win. They didn't play great. And I don't think it's the best win of the year because Utah was on the third game in four nights. The Thunder were coming off four resting nights. And the Thunder looked really rejuvenated, especially in that first half. And they were running like crazy. The Jazz looked a little bit slogged down. But, I mean, that doesn't all delegitimize the win. Utah's a really good team. They went on the road against certainly one of the four best teams in the Western Conference right now. Maybe one of the five best teams in the NBA. They've got a good argument, I think, for a top five team in the NBA. Won six in a row coming into the night. They're a really, really good team. They're getting healthy. They're really just missing Rodney Hood now. So at worst, a really, really, really good win. At best, it's a great win. I don't think it's the best win of the year. I think the best win of the year was probably the one at the Clippers. I mean, we forget now because the Clippers have everyone on their team is, you know, in the ICU. But that team at the start of the year with the way that they were playing, when they had everybody healthy, they were playing amazing basketball on both sides of the ball, and they won at Los Angeles. I thought that was a really good win. I do think the home win against Houston might have been, I think you can argue that was a better win. I just thought they, off the top of my head, I think they might have played a better game that day, but it's certainly not unreasonable to say the Jazz win was better than that, especially because it was on the road. And I think even though I think Utah's a better team than Boston is, I think the way that they won in Boston with the way that Russ just was so unbelievable in the fourth quarter. Like maybe it's less impressive in Boston because it was really just Russ with one of the most impressive performances he's had all year. So, it, you know, bogged down everybody else a little bit more. I guess you can make that argument, but with the way that Russ played in the fourth quarter of the Boston game, 20 points in the fourth, with all the hell that Isaiah Thomas was giving him on the other end, I'll say that the Boston win was about even with this. There's also the home Memphis win, which is in consideration. But those four plus the Jazz are certainly the top five. I'll put the Jazz one like tied for third. Behind the home Houston win, behind the road Clippers win, maybe tied with that road Boston win and ahead of the home Memphis win. Because I think Utah is a better team and the Memphis win was also at home. Next up, from Thunder Brazil. Should the Thunder keep insisting on Payne and Sabonis? I know Sabonis is a rookie and we might be patient, but .. Yeah, they should. They should. I mean, look, Payne was going to be a project. This is still, like, in some ways, his preseason for him coming off a preseason. Like, he broke his foot twice. He's got, when you have a lower extremity injury, it's hard to stay in basketball shape. Whether, even if it, you don't, you know, superficially gain weight, even if you're good on that front. Like, it's just hard to stay in basketball, in NBA shape. Like, maybe you can run 3 miles, but it's hard to stay in NBA shape. And I think he's still regaining his footing. I think he's still kind of learning how to play. Like, he's never played a full NBA season. And I'm not arguing that Cameron Payne is the answer or going to be a great player. I think the Thunder is still trying to figure out what he's going to be, how good he can be. But I think the only way you do that is if you play him. And I think when you got a young team like this, you have to play your young guys. Now, Sabonis, he's been slumping big time lately in terms of the way that he's been shooting the ball. There's no question about that. I won't argue against that. What I will argue is that that doesn't necessarily matter in terms of keeping him in the starting lineup. I think these minutes are invaluable because I think he's going to be a good player. And I think down the line in 2 years, people are going to say, remember when he got all that experience? Remember when he got to play crunch time those couple of times? Remember when he had that huge game at Boston when he had, what was he, 7 for whatever it was in the first half against Boston? And he just went off and really majorly contributed to a road win against a good team. Remember when he got all that experience playing with the starters, developing chemistry with Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams and the rest of those guys? I think people are going to be saying that in 2 years. And I don't think you want to, I don't think you want to slow down that process. I don't think it's worth it so that you can win, what, one more game, two more games during a season? So you can get a, maybe get a 16 instead of a 7, maybe get a 5 instead of a 6. I don't think that's worth it. I think you play for the future with a guy like that. And I think they're doing it, I think they're doing it the right way. Guys tend to come back around when they have talent. And I think we're going to see that happen. Finally, from Kyler Hallmark. How far up the all-time list does Russell Westbrook get in triple-doubles? All right, so I got this called up on the computer. Let's call this up. Thank you, Basketball Reference. So most triple-doubles of all time. Russell Westbrook is now fifth. Tied with Larry Bird. He's 28 years old. And he's tied with Larry Bird. Fifth all-time most triple-doubles. First is Oscar Robertson, 181. Second, Magic Johnson, 138. He's not getting either of those. That's just a crazy amount of triple-doubles. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, maybe he's got, like, maybe he has, what, 20 more, 18 more triple-doubles in him this year? Maybe he gets up near 80 by the end of the year? Maybe he has 15 a year for the next 4 years? But this, to me, just, my only argument for that is I can't comprehend a guy getting to 139 triple-doubles. I can't comprehend a guy averaging basically 20 triple-doubles a year for like a 5 year span. I can't imagine that. And that's, I think, basically what he would have to do. Now, Jason Kidd, number 3, is at 107. Wilt Chamberlain, number 4, is at 78. Those are doable. Wilt Chamberlain, I think he's going to pass. I don't think that's such a bold statement anymore. He's 19 behind Wilt Chamberlain right now. Who's 4th? Wilt's next up. And when you start passing Wilt Chamberlain for statistics like this, that are based on points and rebounds and assists, look, it's amazing already with the other names on this list. You know, behind, it's Russell tied with Larry Bird. And behind him is LeBron James. And behind him is Fat Lever, who is just unbelievably historically underrated. And Bob Cousy and John Havlicek. And this is, you know, these are all, you know, unbelievable talents in the history of the game. When you start passing Wilt Chamberlain, I think that's kind of another level. Wilt is, like, so mystical in the production that he used to put up. But he's going to pass Wilt Chamberlain. I guess he has a chance to do it this year, which is ridiculous because they're, what, 40-some-odd games into the season and 19 triple. He'd basically have to get, you know, one every other game. He's averaging a little bit less than that so far this year. I wouldn't bet on it happening, but I guess it's possible. It's possible, which is an amazing thing. I think he gets you Jason Kidd. I do think he can get up to 3rd by the time he retires, which is an unbelievable thing. Kidd got up to 107. And you look at Jason Kidd's triple-doubles, too, and there, you know, he had 11, 10, and 11. He had 12, 10, and 10. Westbrook's triple-doubles are, you know, 17, 15, and 13. Or I should say 27, 15, and 13, or whatever it is. Like, he just blows these triple-doubles up. It's not even close. Obviously, that doesn't help you climb the ladder anymore, but it's just amazing the types of triple-doubles that he's putting up on seemingly pretty much at least once a week he's doing it. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes to subscribe to Locked on Thunder. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage. That's my blog on normantranscript.com. You can see what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. The Thunder play in New Orleans on Wednesday, so I'm going to be heading to New Orleans on a flight Tuesday morning, and I'll be podcasting from there. I'll preview the New Orleans game. I'll do it from New Orleans, from my hotel in New Orleans. So I might be very full. I might have a lot of shrimp in me. I might have a lot of Cajun food in me. I'm either going to be in a great mood, or I'm going to be in like a physically disgusting mood. Or maybe both. New Orleans is one of those places where you can kind of combine both of those things. So I might be in both of those. But we'll find out when I record the actual podcast. Until then, Lock on Thunder is locking up.